miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps and die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is February 27, 2021. And welcome to the free range open air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are living in an age of collective insanity, where mental illness is now the norm. Think about it. Just a year ago, someone who walked around wearing a mask, washing their hands 25 times a day, carrying around a bottle of hand sanitizer with them everywhere they go, and someone afraid to get next to other people would have been looked at as a germaphobe and someone who is mentally ill. Remember those days? It wasn't that long ago. But not anymore. Oh no. Now that is normal. The new normal. In fact, I'm sure you guys have experienced this. If you walk around town or outside without a mask, you will get some strange looks from certain people, from maskers whose faces are now entirely covered, only their eyes remain. Yeah, the old eyes without a face staring at you. And guys, just the other day, I walked in on a confrontation at one of the local coffee shops between two gringos, and one of them was like a new guy, just moved down here. And strangely enough, he has the striking resemblance to Michael Ivey. I mean, this guy could be a doppelganger for Michael, or at least, let's say, a brother. It's amazing, the resemblance. And, of course, he had the good sense not to be wearing a mask. And this other guy was accosting him and claiming that he belonged to a cult because he wasn't wearing a mask. Can you imagine that, guys? You're a cult member if you don't wear a mask. Collective insanity. Unfreaking believable. You know, it's unbelievable how far we've come in just 1 year. And just imagine if this collective insanity is allowed to continue for 2 more years. Yes, 2 more years of masking. That's what Joy the Groper has already declared for us, along with his sidekick, Tony the Rat Fauci. He said the same thing. And think about it. If this is allowed to continue, an entire generation of children will see this as normal. They'll see it as normal because it is all they will have ever known. We simply cannot allow this to happen. Unbelievable. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of find it laughable that there's this growing conservative movement now within the Republican Party to sort of base, a whole faction of the party around support of Donald Trump. I hate to say this, guys, but it's laughable. In other words, it's kind of like, hey, just sit around and wear your mask for 4 years and wait for Trump to run again in 2024. I don't think that's a good strategy, guys. Trump 2.0, this time it'll be different. Trump, the second coming. I don't know, guys. I think it's a dead end. In fact, I know it's a dead end. Because in 4 years, we're not going to recognize our country or the world if we just sit on our hands. And I saw a couple of clips from the newest CPAC meeting. And I guess Trump is going to speak there on Sunday, tomorrow. You know, the CPAC is what the Conservative Political Action Conference. Yes, the pro-Trump wing of the Republican Party, a road to nowhere. And I heard Ted Cruz yapping away, talking like a preacher, you know, sounding like an evangelical preacher. And Matt Gaetz and what's his name? Ron DeSantis from Florida was there. But of course, you know, if you look into what CPAC really is, it's just sort of this phony conservative movement. And one of the most important things about being a conservative, guys, is supporting Israel. Oh, yeah, absolute fealty to Israel no matter what. That's one of the basic tenets of conservatism, don't you know? Just overlook the bulldozing of Palestinian houses and the bulldozing of people's farms. In fact, the bulldozing of entire cities to make room for Jewish settlers who are usually from America. Oh, yeah. Ain't that special? That's what it means to be a conservative, guys. But meanwhile, the COVID agenda marches on despite the little dog and pony show going on over at CPAC. And I'll have to give credit where credit is due. At least Governor DeSantis of Florida is taking a stand against lockdowns. And if this phone call between him and Joe Biden is true, we don't know. You can't believe a word you hear from the mainstream press. But if it's true, he is making a stand, at least partly. But did any of these politicians, so-called conservatives, warn the American public to at least think twice before allowing themselves to be injected with a quackzine, as Giuseppe calls them, a vaccine that is experimental with emergency use authorization, giving the manufacturer zero liability for any damage that may be done to the public? That's quite a deal, isn't it? You make a product and it's almost made mandatory, almost, not yet, but almost mandatory, and you have no liability for what happens. That's a hell of a deal, guys. And I just heard today that Johnson & Johnson, their one-dose vaccine has been approved. Big surprise. And hey, you know, I thought Johnson & Johnson made Band-Aids and, you know, baby shampoo, you know, no more tears baby shampoo. But now they make vaccines. Yeah. And it's interesting. This is a one-dose vaccine. And they're not claiming it's going to stop you from getting sick. They're only claiming that this vaccine will prevent you from dying. So they're kind of moving the goalposts around with all these vaccines. And I heard Tony the Rat Fauci saying, well, just take whatever vaccine is offered to you. Don't be picky. Just roll up that sleeve and let them inject whatever witch's brew happens to come your way, don't think twice about it. Yep, they're moving those goalposts around, aren't they? And the only politicians on the world stage who have even dared to question the COVID narrative, as far as I know, are the president of Belarus and the president of Brazil. And isn't it interesting, after Lukashenko took a stand against COVID and said, we don't have COVID here, and just drink a couple shots of vodka and take a nice hot sauna, you'll be fine. Sounds like good advice to me. Saunas are a great health benefit. And, of course, within weeks of this statement, a color revolution was formed against Lukashenko. Accusations of election fraud and human rights abuses followed, of course, just like clockwork, isn't it, guys? Yeah, just like clockwork. And, you know, Bolsonaro, a few months back, he disputed that the hospitals were full. The media was reporting, oh, the hospitals in Brazil, they're at maximum capacity. You know, the bodies are stacking up on the streets of Brazil like firewood. And at least he had the courage to say the hospitals are not full. That's not true. And Bolsonaro even said, hey, I don't think I'm taking that vaccine. Do what you want, but I'm not taking it. I think that's the only world leader that actually said that. So there's been very, very little pushback against this agenda, hasn't there? And of course, one reason that really explains this lack of pushback are the fact that almost every country in the world is strapped down with IMF and World Bank loans. And of course, in order to get your hands on those magic shekels, part of the loan agreement is that your country will follow any and all dictates that come from the World Health Organization. Got to follow those health dictates, guys, or no magic shekels for you. Yeah, I'll tell you what. People used to get the flu. Flu doesn't exist anymore. They even said so in England. There's no flu. It's a miracle. That's because everybody was washing their hands 25 times a day. Yeah, that's believable. So now, they're starting to really unveil what the real agenda is to the general public, to the great unwashed masses of Goyim cattle. And of course, it was revealed just a few days ago that all of the head research scientists at Pfizer and Moderna, all of the head scientists are Jewish. Uh-oh. I guess the vaccine is kosher. No cause for alarm. But the real agenda is being unveiled. And now they're saying, you guys remember this, like just a couple of months ago, they're saying, hey, just take the vaccine and things will begin to go back to normal. And there's so many people that believe that load of crap. It's unreal. They can't wait to line up and get that shot. But as it turns out, even after everybody is vaccinated, you're still going to have to wear that mask for 2 more years and socially distance. And your kids are going to have to wear a mask in school and sit behind a plexiglass box. And if you're in band, you're going to have to sit in one side of those bubbles, a COVID bubble, plastic bubble, so you don't breathe on anybody. What a way to treat our children. But now they're saying that also you still might be able to spread COVID even after you take that vaccine, even though you have no symptoms. Oh yeah, the goalposts are moving around, guys. And now here's the big one. I just heard this the other day. You guys have probably already heard it. It looks like you might need a booster shot every year. Maybe even more often than that. Giuseppe thinks it might be even more than that. But they're already saying you need a booster shot, and they're working on, what was the word Tony the Rat said? Enhancing the vaccines, like a salesman. It's enhanced. It's got to be good if it's enhanced, right? And these coming COVID passports, I was reading about this, and it's going to show your vaccine schedule. Not whether or not you had a vaccine, your vaccine schedule, which implies, of course, one of many. And these vaccine passports, if they do end up happening, and I believe they will, it's just all part of a grand agenda. These passports are only good for 1 year. What does that tell you? Only good for 1 year, guys. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, Joey the Groper Biden. And it was kind of funny. You know, I was seeing in the chat on Giuseppe's shows last night in Revolution Radio that some people were postulating that Groper Joe is a robot or a cyborg. I don't know if I believe that, but it is a funny idea. I kind of like it. Pictures of him, you know, in one picture, he has black eyes. Dead black eyes. And in another picture, just taken a few days, you know, between, he has blue eyes. So I don't know if that means he's a robot, but it's certainly an interesting idea. Anyway, so Joey the Groper has, you know, this $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. And, you know, I was trying to look through this thing and figure out, well, where's $1.9 trillion going. So, you know, there's $14 billion for vaccine research. That should clue you in. Why would they need $14 billion in vaccine research if this crisis was almost over? Yeah. And they're already saying, well, we don't know if the vaccines are going to work against all the new variants, but we think they will. But we're working on enhanced vaccines nonetheless. Those are nice little clues, little breadcrumbs they're dropping for us, aren't they? And then they're saying there's $50 billion for coronavirus testing and contact tracing. A lot of money being made on those tests. You know, I've got a friend that works at an alternative health clinic, and the owner is making all of the employees take 2 corona tests a month and pay for it out of their own pocket. And each test costs $180. So that's almost $400 a month down the tubes, just so you can have the honor of working. And then further on in this COVID bill, which I don't know that that's even the right term for it, $16 billion for vaccine distribution and supply. So the government is paying for vaccines and the distribution of them. It's a pretty good deal for these pharmaceutical companies, isn't it? Government pays for the research. They're buying the vaccines. They might even mandate you take them, and there's no liability. That's a hell of a deal if you can get it. And then $130 billion for schools to install ventilation systems, providing masks for the little kitties, hand gel, testing, and reducing class sizes. Another indication, this is a long-term project. And of course, those little plexiglass shields around every little kid's desk. What a crime. What a crime. Turning schools into slave conditioning centers, you know, as bad as they already are now, what they're basically slave indoctrination centers. Now they're going to be conditioning little kids to be slaves in every respect. This is child abuse. Then $100 billion to states, basically to bail out all of these states who have destroyed their economies by preventing people from working and opening their businesses. Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. I got a message you got to type out here. Okay. But yeah, $100 billion for the states that ruin their own economies by closing everything. Just printing it up and handing it out. Keep your state closed, we'll give you more money. But here's the point I'm getting to with all this. I couldn't find any article that explains where the $1.9 trillion is going. I listed those things, but you know, let's keep in mind here, guys, that a trillion is 1,000 billion. Okay, and what I read off isn't even 500 billion. And I saw some other minor things where the money's going for checks and this and that, but it doesn't come anywhere close to 1,900 billion dollars, just to put it into perspective. Because you say, oh, 1.9 trillion. Well, that's 1,900 billion dollars. So where is all that money going? Where is it going, Sniffer Joe? It's a mystery. But what I think is happening is that an entirely new economic system is being created, and a lot of that money is going to go for the infrastructure of this new system. And this new system is veiled in secrecy, shrouded in secrecy. And it's speculation as to exactly what it is or how it's going to be created. But I'm convinced a lot of this money is going to set up a whole new infrastructure for a whole new kind of economy. Yeah. And for example, you know, look at so many of these well-known companies that we know don't really earn money in the way that we've been told. Well, you have to make a profit, and then the profit is determined by how much you sell. You know, like Tesla, that company has never made any money ever. I think it made money in one quarter where they jig-rigged the books and shuffled around debt, said, oh, look, we made money. But really, that company's always lost money. Then you have to ask yourself, well, why haven't any newspapers gone out of business? Not a single newspaper that I know of has ever gone out of business, even though all the news now is essentially, it's essentially free, isn't it? Yet not one major newspaper has failed. So this is an indication that we have a very different type of economy running than what the average person on the street thinks. Yeah, very different system. And then, you know, we have all these sports teams that none of them have gone bankrupt, even though they haven't really been playing or making any money over the last year. And now they're reopening at, what, 10% capacity. And you know, viewership must be significantly down for all sports across the board. There's got to be plenty of people that are just saying, screw it, I don't care about sports anymore. Yet none of them have gone bankrupt. So we're seeing, you know, a whole class of companies that are too big to fail. We heard that about certain banks and certain investment companies. And that concept is being expanded in this new economy that we're seeing slowly unveiled before our eyes. And then there's money in this COVID bill too, to bail out this, that, and the other thing. And what it comes down to is the government is aligning itself with these companies. They're saying, look, hey, we're going to give you some money, but hey, we're partners now. You know what I'm saying? We're partners. Yeah. So yeah, new economic system is coming. And isn't it interesting too, that the money that's being provided for small businesses and restaurants, most of that money is in the form of a loan. Oh yeah, a loan. And look, if your business is in the tank and you take out a loan, all you're doing is digging a deeper hole. You're extending your lifetime by taking more drugs, let's say. So that's not really much help. But it looks like it's compassionate. We're helping small business get deeper into debt. Well, not really. Okay, well, in other news, I guess just the other day, you guys have probably heard this already, that Groper Joe bombed Syria, but it was to get this Iranian-backed militia in Syria, and supposedly, according to the news, This Iranian-backed militia was responsible for killing an American contractor. And, you know, that is usually code for a CIA operative, an American contractor. Yeah. So Anthony Blinken, the Jewish head of state now, Secretary of State here in the States, said that this attack is a clear message to the Iranians that we will protect ourselves. Yes, we're going to protect ourselves from 3,000 miles away, meddling in other countries' affairs halfway around the world. But we're protecting ourselves, much like Israel is always protecting itself when it bombs a Palestinian city. And this is some strange logic, but the mainstream media is claiming that this is an attempt to get the Iranians to get to the negotiating table about nuclear weapons. You know, so we're going to blow some stuff up and then say, hey, let's get to the negotiating table. That's not really believable to me. It's kind of gangster behavior. You know, it's kind of like, hey, it's a nice country you got here. It'd be a shame if someone was to blow it up. It'd be a shame. It would hurt me very deeply if that was to happen to your country. Yeah. Of course, we're not dealing with the Italian mafia here, are we? I'd say this is more of a kosher mafia we're dealing with here. And somehow, you know, Americans are supposed to care if Iran gets nuclear weapons, as though that's going to make any kind of a difference to any of our lives. And what I would say is that Iran had better get nuclear weapons and fast, as quickly as possible, because it's their only hope of not having their country being bombed, destroyed, and then invaded, just like Iraq was. And, you know, Muammar Gaddafi's example should set the stage for any Mideastern country wanting to negotiate on those terms. What did he do? He gave up all of his weapons of mass destruction. And what happened to him? Well, I think he was anally raped by a broomstick and then killed like a dog in the street. And then his country was invaded and destroyed. That should be a lesson to anyone who's going to trust the Zionist American negotiation techniques. And then, of course, you know, it seems like this is no big deal. Hey, we bombed Syria again, no big deal. And, you know, the anti-war left has seemed to completely evaporated. It does not exist anymore. And everybody seems to be pretty okay with this. And it wasn't that long ago that the left, you know, one of the things they actually stood for was being anti-war. This does not exist anymore. It seems to have been replaced by this LGBTQ WTF agenda, or the gay disco, as E. Michael Jones calls it. Yeah. Yeah, that's what's important now. Making sure that people have free access to all the anal sex they want. But anti-war, hey, that's not important anymore. Yeah. And of course, it should be a very ominous sign to the Iranians that the majority of Joe Biden's cabinet positions are occupied by Jewish Americans, most of them dual citizens. The last count I heard was 12 or 14 of them. And even now the CIA director, the acting CIA director is David Cohen. And the nominee to be the new CIA director is William Burns. And I'm not 100% he's Jewish. I'm not 100% certain he's Jewish, but pretty certain he is. A lot of Jewish magazines and publications seem to be very interested in him. So I'm not 100% sure, but all signs point to yes. And isn't it interesting, too, that you can find the Jewish guide to this and what does this mean to Jews, you know, all over the internet. It's very open. They're very open about it. But if there is some website or article that said, hey, what does this mean to white people? Ooh, you can't do that. That's white supremacism. Very bad. Very bad. That's one of our biggest enemies now, guys, don't you know? And then lastly, the media is making a big deal about this killing of Jamal Khashoggi. And again, I'm not certain why Americans are supposed to care about this one way or another. The CIA has said that they've determined that, you know, Prince Salman is responsible for the killing. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But, you know, nowadays, if the CIA leaks some information to the mainstream media, they just run with it. And it's like the word of God. It's the gospel truth. End of discussion. And of course, we don't even know why this guy was really killed. He comes from Anan Khashoggi, his brother, was a very powerful arms dealer. And of course, that implies all kinds of deep state and intelligence connections, a whole world of realities that most people have no idea about. But they just, promote this Jamal Khashoggi as this, he was an innocent journalist. But, you know, we don't know the reasons, and I don't see why it's that significant, but they're really playing it up. And again, not that long ago, the left was deeply suspicious of the CIA and intelligence agencies. But now if the CIA says something, hey, that's it. It's the gospel truth. End of story. So yeah, there we go. That's about all I have for my little rant this week. That said, I would like to bring on my co-host and my main man, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, hey. How is it going, man? How are you?
Well, let me take a measure. I'm living the dream. Thank you. As in the Maya illusion, of course.
Ah, yes. Good reference.
Yeah. Hey, man, great intro. You touched on the satanically evil strategy by the chicken swingers, which is to brain rape and indoctrinate these young children to accept their slave training and accept the lies of the Talmudic child abusers and child murderers, the Satanists that they are. And so it's all going to be normal for them. It's just, it's time to roll out in great number the Leo Frank protocol.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting too how, you know, the whole discussion about reopening, we got to reopen the schools, the kids got to go to school, but there's no discussion of, well, okay, we're reopening the schools in what context of kids wearing masks all day in school and being tested for COVID, you know, a couple times a week and sitting in a plexiglass box. And you've seen those green pods that they made the kids in band class sit inside as they played their instruments so they didn't breathe on anybody. I mean, this is tantamount to child abuse, and I don't see how any parent would send their children to have to endure this every day.
Well, the parents are forced into being subservient cowards because what is it, up to like 90% of the average American lives paycheck to paycheck, and if they are somehow forced out of that check by the international Jew bankers, they're going to be living out of their car in about a month or 60 days. So they have to go along to get along. It's just so insidiously, demonically malevolent. It's really offensive to me.
Yeah. And what's your take on this, you know, Sniffer Joe bombing Syria because of these awful Iranian-backed militias?
Oy vey, Rabbi Lipschitz said, Gropa Joe, it's time to pay the piper.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a joke. I mean, the I think I said this last week on some show that kind of blurs. We do quite a few. That, you know, in World War II, it was Uncle Sam to the rescue. Then in the Vietnam era, the veterans started to call the archetype Uncle Sugar because promised you a lot of things and you know it was a sweet deal. And of course they were being cynically facetious. And now it's Uncle Shlomo, the Talmudic malignancy that is stage four, controls everything in this country. There's nothing that those vile parasites don't operate right now. Control the mass media, control the federal government, control the Supreme Court, control the military. I mean, control corporations. They've got it down between their you know, we used to say two sides of the slices, rather the kosher sandwich, the Zio capitalist international Jew banker side and the communist side. But as Nikki Rapana and Lark in Texas and Brian and Jenna point out so much, it's merged. It's communitarianism now. And communitarianism now flipping controls even local school boards and local DAs and local. It's just, you know, it is just beyond. I feel like I'm in a bad sci-fi B movie, like a bad remake of the Pod People one. I can't think of what the actual name of that one was.
Invasion of the Body
Snatchers. Yes, right, exactly. I feel like that's what we're living, a bad version, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Pod People, the Mass People, the zombie hordes that are hungry.
Gotta do that. There we go.
Yeah, and they seem to be getting more angry towards people that don't wear masks. And I just can you believe that they're trying to already tell people that, hey, two more years of masking even after you take that special shot in the arm that's going to supposedly fix everything? No, it turns out it's not.
Well, as you well know, it's the greatest psychological operation in the history of mankind. This is just a gain of function bioweapon adjustment to the common cold coronavirus. Even with that initial weird deadly AIDS of the lung that burned out quickly, because whenever something is deadly in the laboratory, it quickly attenuates in nature, because viruses or whatever the contaminant microbial is, because I tend to agree more and more with Tom Cowan and Stefan Lanka that they're trying to make the virus into the cause of disease, and it's not true. There is something that causes disease, and there is communicable disease that spread. I mean, look no further than chickenpox or what have you. But I don't think it's a virus. I think that in their arrogance and their you know, the great white hunter can conquer nature bullshit, they completely have it wrong. I think that viruses are some type of genetic messenger, and they may do something else. I don't agree that it's simply cleaning up the cell and then it erupts. I don't think that's the right postulation. I think it's more like what Dr. Zach Bush says, that it's more one of the fundamental building blocks of all life on Earth, along with fungi and bacteria. And people don't understand. They can't think that you have literally trillions of viruses in your body functioning. You have trillions of bacteria. If you didn't have your gut bacteria, you would die quickly. And so you should live in harmony with that and work to nourish the good microbial entities that keep you alive and functioning, instead of trying to wipe them out because you're so asininely ignorant and don't even have a basic understanding of how the body works, how nature works, how natural medicine, not that snake oil bullshit from the Rockefellers that's now turned into this pseudo scientific, pseudo religious cult of the white lab coat, cult of the magic pill, cult of the injection. That's just, like I said, a bad science fiction movie. Although I will add the addendum that acute trauma care by allopathic practitioners, i.e. the emergency room or the battlefield, is second to none. I mean, they have figured, because it's a mechanistic model, it's a materialistic model. So they figured out how to keep the living machine going and heal it from acute trauma. But they have no, they're completely off base with the big pharma model of take this, take that, take this. Because every prescription pharmaceutical has ridiculous side effects, and there's always a natural way to deal with just about anything unless it's life-threatening. Then you go to the acute trauma care. Other than that, but no, everyone has to be so afraid of a derivative of the coronavirus, the common cold, that, by the way, in nature mutates constantly, this lie that, oh, it's mutated in South Africa. Oh, the British mutation. It is mutating millions of times a day around the world. That is just, again, a lie to drive the real agenda of the Talmudic chicken swinger, which is two-pronged, like a bifurcated serpent's tongue. The one prong is an out-and-out eugenics program. They want the population numbers dramatically decreased. And the second is transhuman experimentation to see how they can mutate the body to make it controllable via either organic nanotechnology or some type of synthetic nanotechnology.
Yeah, and I just find it interesting that they're finally admitting that, oh, guess what? You're going to need a booster shot every year. And just because you have the vaccine doesn't mean that you can't spread it to other people, even though you're asymptomatic. I mean, this whole story, they just move the goalposts around. And, you know, the bottom line is they can't possibly admit to the general public what the real plan is, because if they said, hey, you're going to have a vaccine every year, you have to wear a mask for 5 years, your kids are going to be in school with masks, and you're not going to be able to travel without a COVID passport. If they did that all at once, people would say, hey, we're not going to put up with this crap. So they're just doing it slowly. And so that people don't realize what's going on until it's too late. And this admission that we need a new booster every year, it should be a real wake-up call to everybody that if they can get people to do it once, it'll never end.
It's not a vaccine. It's a genetically modifying little bullet that's injected, coated with polyglycanol lipid derivative over a regular lipid. And inside that is that synthetically created mRNA snippet, and so which uses the CRISPR technology to cut out your piece and insert itself and then massively reproduce like a good Catholic. And so it's so beyond the pale in my mind. And this is for a cold derivative that has a survival rate for anyone under the age of 65 of 99.997%, which is higher than the survival rate of a flu shot, 99.5%, which for 40 years has been worthless and just gives you the flu or turns you into Typhoid Mary, Typhoid Larry super spreader of the flu, which is exactly what is coming. Flu shots are worthless. This new shot is not only worthless, it will maim you. It will highly likely kill you, because what will happen here in the next 6 months or 18 months is there will be a big mutation. You know, like if you have software and the software updates from 14.1 to 14.2, it's typically not a big deal. But when the coronavirus mutates in nature in a significant change from 14.2 to 15.0, that's when the hard wiring of your genetic code by this supremely evil injection won't know what to do, and it will create a fire alert in the form of a cytokine storm, which will turn the body's immune system on itself, which causes massive inflammation in all the major organs, and especially bad in the lungs and the heart and the liver. So it is a horrible way to die, and that's what's coming for these idiots that will take the injection.
But then, you see, it's all going to be blamed on this new variant of COVID that the vaccination didn't protect you against. And the solution is going to be, hey, guess what? You need another vaccine or else you're going to die.
Yeah, right. Talk about an inversion, as our dear friend Chris. Oh, there he is. I missed him. Sorry, buddy. I don't know. Sorry, it shrunk my window, and I didn't know he was there. Jeez.
Oh, Chris, are you there?
Hey there, Chris. Sorry, man. My bad. You know,
okay, well, he'll come back. He probably just got tired of waiting.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry about that. But anyway, when he hears, yeah, he'll come on.
Yeah. Earth to Chris. Yeah, I want to get his take on things. The other thing I find strange is they're making a big deal. Jamal Khashoggi was killed by, Prince Salman of Saudi Arabia. The CIA said so we know it's true. And there's so many questions about this because, you know, Khashoggi's brother, Anan Khashoggi, was one of the – at one time, he was the biggest arms dealer in the entire world.
Yeah, right.
And so you're talking about a covert world of intelligence agencies, you know, spooks, deep state operations. God only knows what this Jamal Khashoggi was part of and why he was really killed. But we're just supposed to believe, well, he was an innocent journalist and those awful Saudis killed him. That's the end of the story. And we should really take great importance in this somehow.
Yeah, good point. I mean, it's really – the point is it's all a deception. So what does it matter, number one? There he is. Maybe now it's Chris. Sorry, man. I had the window shrunk. I didn't see you in the scrollable window.
Oh, no problem, man. I was just listening to you guys going on there. Yeah, great stuff. I'm kind of shaking my head at what you guys are talking about too, and wondering if these people that have been so prone to deceive us and rule us by deception are ever going to somehow come up with a truth, and if there's like white hats behind the scenes fighting for the truth and for the right thing for humanity. And I just don't see that. I don't know. Have you guys at all seen any glimmer of hope or things that you know, most of the Q crowd are referring to manifesting itself?
We're the white hats, not
I those. Believe we are. Yeah, yeah, I don't think there's any other white hats here. I really don't. Yeah. I hate to say it.
Well, it should become clear to everybody that this federal government has been completely co-opted at pretty much every level, and yeah, they're all on the same page towards pushing this agenda. And the Groper Joe administration is nothing more than a con job to try to get Americans to accept this this agenda.
They're all in on this together, and they've been since day one. And like you guys are talking about with all the transgender stuff and like the corporate agendas behind this, they're all working in lockstep towards these same goals, these same objectives. And really, none of this seems to favor humanity. You hear these billionaires always talking about building a better world or build back a better Bilderberger or whatever they're saying. And really, this better world, I don't see it having anything good in store for the common man. I see them just ramping up their slave debt slavery inventory systems and quantum analysis, you know, maybe just tightening the lens on the Skinner box that they call our daily lives and the Truman Show. But really, I don't see anything better being offered to us. I don't see any politicians advocating for humanity or for the common man. I don't see any attempt for labor to demand higher wages other than the fight for 15 for what, fast food workers. And you know, that's the plan. I mean, there's no production of goods. There's nothing like this. I mean, these are national security issues. Where are these people, you know, protecting the children from these creeps? These are the creeps that are making our laws, are spending our money, our tax dollars, and really sending us off to these wars and creating these theatric absurdities that we are supposed to set our belief structures and our lives around, which are made and obviously are made on fiction. So, like, what do we do with this, guys? I mean, this is literally where delusion meets pretend, and people are calling this their lives. I don't know. I mean, most people live their whole lives without even getting to this point of understanding this. So I know I'm rambling here, but what do you guys think about this?
You're dead on. It's absolutely right.
Man, I thought I was going crazy and shit.
No, it's absolutely.
Wait, someone to tell me I'm nuts.
It has been 111 year effort to by the Zionists, Samuel Untmeyer and what's the other guy's name? The other Jew who was driving at the infiltration of the United States that ultimately co-opted Woody Wilson, created the Federal Reserve, got the traitor communist Louis Brandeis on the Supreme Court, and it's all been
Colonel House.
Well, House General wasn't House? A Jew. I was thinking of Theodore Herzl or to a lesser Weitzman degree, Moses Hess. They were all cooked up the plan to infiltrate and ultimately take over the United States, and it really kicked in about the 90s, because up until the 90s, politicians, federally elected politicians, lived basically in their constituency. They'd fly home together on the same planes Friday, go home, face the voters, live amongst the voters, and they knew that their job was dependent on the local voter, regional voter. Now, since the 90s, when the Jew took over everything, it's all based on who's giving you the big money to get reelected and who's backing you in the same mass media that the Jew owns. And so now they have no accountability to the constituency. And as such, you hit it on the head. There's no one looking out for us, and especially for those poor children who are being mind raped and slave trained.
Man, I've seen – sorry, I knew you were going to jump in, Dave. I'm sorry if I cut you off. I was going to say I watched on the road, you know, in hotels, the cable for the first time in a better part of a year. And it was literally like a full-time 24/7 marketing phase for these vaccines, for this virus, for this complete absurdity that they've manufactured from the get-go to serve as cover fire for this reset and this technocratic transition. I can't believe that people are buying this.
It is amazing. And, you know, just in a few minutes, at the top of the next hour, we're going to bring on Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, and we're going to talk about some interesting things. You know, Vladimir Putin made quite a speech at the World Economic Forum saying that basically there is not going to be a great reset. And it seems like, you know, Putin has been sort of a fly in the ointment towards the global homo agenda and other things. He seems to be operating from a nationalist standpoint, really getting Russia in an interesting position in the world right now. You can criticize Putin, but if it hadn't been for him, I think that we would have seen all of the Russian assets stripped and sold off to the highest bidder. That's what was happening under his predecessor. So we'll get a take on that, and I also want to find out what Dr. Johnson's take is on this Russian vaccine, which seems to be based on standard so-called vaccine technology. It's not one of these RDNA.
mRNA.
Yeah, mRNA technology. So we'll get into a conversation about that and just see where it all takes us.
Well, have either one of you gentlemen seen that? It was Thursday, I think I saw it first, and I saw it again Friday, memes that Putin has eliminated all Rothschild control of the Russian – or involvement, rather, in the Russian central bank. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, I should go find that meme. I don't know if I saved it or not, but I will find it.
Well, if it's on a meme, it's got to be true. Just like
Bitcoin, but it was like capturing a news page. You know,
I know. I hear what you're saying, though. I'm just –
oh, come on, man. Don't bust my balls.
No, sorry, dude.
No, I'm just joking.
It's definitely true. The White Hats are in charge. The Patriots are in charge. Trump's the plan. Everything's cool. No, Putin's actually had a sense of duty to, at least to the sense of the position that he upholds and a duty to the people, whether it's a theatric or legit is maybe a different story. And arguably whether he's an insider or not, or a Mason or not, it's maybe a different story. But he seems to at least uphold some sense of perception of duty to his people, which is far more than anybody we can say in Washington that we've got going for us, including the Orange Crush. That's the thing. We've seen that Orange Crush get turned into the clock. Work Orange with a quickness and nope.
That's a good line, man.
All right. Well, okay. Well, I guess there's a problem with the
we're back.
Server
they boot
here.
Me out again.
We're back.
Yeah, I think that was it. Back to your host. So we're back on. Giuseppe, I think Dr. Johnson wants to come on through Skype.
Okay, I can add him through Skype. No problem.
Okay, great. Okay, well, we'll just hopefully that was the final. We'll be right back. Back to your host routine. So maybe let's go ahead and bring on Dr. Johnson.
Yeah, I'm looking for him in the list right now. Here we go. Here he is.
Great.
Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, are you there, sir?
I am here, my friend.
Okay. Dr. Johnson, thank you for coming back on the show. How are you, sir?
I just paid $1,500 in property tax. I just did my regular income taxes. So, I've been better.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, that's not a great way to start the day, no doubt. And it puts it in perspective as to who's running the show and how much you really own in this system that's set up for us. I wanted to possibly start off our conversation by going into Vladimir Putin's speech at the World Economic Forum. It made quite a row worldwide, and some people are calling it one of the most important speeches in the last 5 or 6 years. Basically, he said there'll be no global reset. Maybe you could go into your take on that and what Putin said and where that takes the world.
Well, you may know that Sven Longshanks and I did a whole show on the subject. These speeches he's made several times in the past. He said a few things. He condemned the notion of the reset, knowing full well who's behind it. Number two, he condemned big tech censorship in the West, which is a very big deal. Number three, he attacked the massive income inequalities in the Western world. And how that has everything to do with oligarchy and how things are run. But I would say if I had to summarize the whole thing, and it's something that I've been saying for many years, it would be that in the Eastern world, the state is more powerful than capital. In the Western world, capital is more powerful than the state. And that absolutely changes everything. And it's very difficult to analyze or understand Russian politics or Chinese politics or anything else without understanding that. And that's a key element here.
Hey, Dr. Johnson, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts about big data being kind of a replacement to the concept of, say, labor in terms of conventional national economies? It seems like that is kind of the goal that they're trying to push in with this crypto and the social contact tracing and the whole Vax ID and, of course, many other things with quantum analysis, AI integration, all this stuff. What are your thoughts on this? As human labor becomes rendered obsolete by the robber barons, I really think they're trying to transition these fundamental economic principles into a new experiment, as we can call it. I just want to get your take on that and how it plays into the global scene, the domestic scene.
Well, when I did, again, another show on the Great Reset, I also have a paper on the subject, which has made its rounds around the Russian web. One of the white papers that the Davos Forum came out with has to do with what's going to happen with labor. And several things are, the gig economy, temporary work, no real long-term contracts, a lot of working from home, Of course, you can't have, you know, minimal human contact. Unions are gone. But the other thing that they didn't address is, you know, someone still has to produce hardware. Someone still has to produce things. Someone still has to farm. I mean, that's still, to a great extent, the source of value. Is people where I'm not a Lockean or anything. But yeah, maybe that is one thing that Marx was right about, was that you still need production. You still need to take human reason and apply it to raw materials to make things. That doesn't go away just because the regime is so many steps away from reality. And as this is going on, wages will continue to fall. Human contact alone, I mean, let alone unionization, but human contact and therefore human trust collapses. And as that collapses, any real grounds for rebellion collapses. So I'm not sure, you know, how labor could be increasingly irrelevant. And the U.S., and actually I have a paper on this, that these countries in the third world that have absorbed a lot of formerly American and Western labor are becoming very powerful. And they have huge, I mean, Vietnam was one recently that the U.S. has declared economic war on, claiming that it's cheating, that it's manipulating its currency. And that's why there's this huge trade surplus that they have with the U.S. So what the U.S. does is when these countries become too powerful because they have taken all these labor jobs that used to be in the West, in fact, even now China's outsourcing. China and Japan are outsourcing to Vietnam. They declare war on them. So it really doesn't go away. But there's always going to be a need for labor. There's always going to be a need for actually working on raw materials. I think a lot of this stuff, while it's very important, has a lot to do with media imagery as much as anything else.
Yeah, and you know, part of the criticism that Putin seemed to be leveling against this global reset or the Great Reset is that the entire structure of the system just doesn't seem to be realistic in terms of how it would manifest in the actual world. It seemed like he was just saying this is a bunch of fantasy and it can't possibly work.
Well, he's made it very clear. I mean, you know, you've seen the videos yourself of him forcibly keeping manufacturing jobs in China. Oligarchs function the exact same way, no matter where they are. And what they care about, of course, is securing the title to the property they have and seeking a lower, both lower transaction costs and lower labor costs, which means they're globalist by definition. Of course, it's a fantasy. And I also want to say, and I've said this before, that this is all very short term. You see this, you know, everywhere except in the East, a complete lack of faith in the Western economy, especially the U.S. dollar and the stability of the U.S. government. So this has more to do with asset stripping than actual production. But that's not the case in the East. The U.S. is on the verge of declaring war on both Russia and China. I'm sure you've come across this at some point as the last-ditch attempt to drag the U.S. out of its ridiculous depression and massive debt. And because it's simply the debt can't be repaid, the economy can't really recover without credit. My God, I mean, even something as simple as $3 gas around here in Pennsylvania, despite oil being in negative numbers still. So this is, you know, it costs more to store oil than to sell it. They'd rather just drain it. So it's pure asset stripping. It's pure gouging. And therefore, it's real. It's just short term. No one has any longer, even medium term, faith in the dollar or the U.S. economy. You know, they'll condemn these countries on one side of their mouth, but try to invest in them with the other. And they've been doing this for a long time. Russia, Belarus, China as well, and even Vietnam. Frankly, their economies are more rational, they're more stable, and they're more fair than the West. The West is unstable, and they tend to project all of that onto the East.
And they really are building their economies around sound money principles. Like Russia and China are accumulating gold and silver and commodities. And like you say, valuing the labor in terms of production of goods. And I'm just saying, as far as wages, they can seem to get away with these things more readily than maybe the United States can with some of the traditional obstacles that we've had put in as far as labor unions and things like that. So it's been an amazing transition to see this Fourth Reich Industrial Revolution come in under this reset, and these people literally go to work on a plan they've had for decades, arguably, and even if as it's going into lockstep, like we're seeing it, people are still refusing to admit or accept the possibility, and it's a likelihood.
Well, you know, one thing he said at the Davos Forum, I mentioned class stratification. He says, now he's quoting the World Bank. He says 3.6 million Americans live with an income of about $5.50 a day. Million people. So, you know, they could talk about their, you know, recommodification of things and the digital economy. But it doesn't affect anybody. That affects a handful of people. He mentions that in the last 30 years, in the so-called developed economies, incomes stagnated for more than half of the citizens. And yet the costs of healthcare and education, all kinds of services, have increased by at least 300%. And they're lying about inflation. They're lying about unemployment.
Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, the American working class having, especially males, because the female incomes have gone up. But male incomes have not. 7/8 of the layoffs since 1978 have been male, and in male dominated industries, you know, steel and auto and everything else. But they have no faith either. They have no prospect of any kind of increased income. And now the Davos thing, when this first came out, there wasn't an English translation of it. I had to do it myself in the middle of the night because I thought there would be one. But, you know, they're talking about the pressures. He's talking about the pressures put on families, lower income, stagnating incomes, no faith in the political system, economic system, or the currency, not really knowing how to state that, and yet having more responsibilities, a more corrupt system, and higher prices all over the place. So this digitized economy, this is for an oligarchy. This is for a handful of people. They're not even addressing the average person anymore. The fact that they're openly in this great reset, openly talking about the destruction of even long-term contracts. You're gonna get hired like a band at a club. You can hire just, you know, on a one-time deal, the project, and then you're gone. You know, they're not even gonna have so things like benefits are gonna go, pensions are gonna go. And this whole thing is short term. This is about an oligarchy. This is about a handful of people. It's not anything real. Putin's absolutely right in what he said. And by quoting all these statistics about the disaster of the average working family in the West, he's talking about the one thing that that few people in the West were talking about. I mean, one of the big errors of Donald Trump was to go on and on about this tremendous American economy before COVID. No, the U.S. was in a depression before COVID. It never recovered from the 2008 meltdown. How can you recover when you had interest rates at zero and nothing was happening? There's no credit left. You can't have $30 trillion in public and private sector debt and then claim that you can take out any more credit. It doesn't make any sense. And without credit, nothing can recover.
Right. And without manufacturing, you don't really have an economy. And, I want to get your take on this, and then I want to hand the baton over to Giuseppe. But, I think one of the greatest miscalculations on the part of the Democrats or these people that were pushing this Russia, Russia, Russia narrative, and maybe it's not a miscalculation, maybe it's deliberate, but it seems like what they've done is they've pushed Russia and China closer together by demonizing all things Russia. And what do you think the current relationship is between Russia and China? And do you think that's correct, that they've pushed the two nations closer together through this narrative?
Well, this has been one of the central arguments of my career over the last 20 years. I've been writing on this for so long. one of the essential, critical institutions in international politics and political economy is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. There's a very good reason most people haven't heard about this. This is both the diplomatic, the financial, the economic, and the military alliance between Russia and China. Shanghai Cooperation Organization is essentially a Eurasianist movement, very anti-liberal, and it also contains Pakistan, India, who they got to cooperate, believe it or not, Iran, Armenia, Belarus, most of Central Asia. This is a huge organization. As the Western economies collapse, they don't really need them anymore. The only thing that the U.S. was ever good for, as far as the Chinese were concerned, was to, you know, mop up their excess production. Americans would spend themselves into oblivion. Well, that can't happen anymore. So then what good is it? China is now the European Union's number one economic partner, not the U.S. That was just a few months ago that was announced. Right. But you're right to say, because the two are demonized for the same reason, they're being provoked by the U.S. military every – about once a month there's a story. I've dealt with this ad nauseum, really. The attempt to get them to fire on an American plane coming close to the border, things like that. They've been cooperating militarily, economically. So much of the Chinese technological base comes from Russia. So its military equipment is almost fully compatible with the Russians. There is both a de facto and de jure alliance between the two, which include, my God, even Turkey is buying weapons. There have been sanctions on Turkey since December, buying both Russian and Chinese anti-aircraft weaponry. And they're a NATO member, which always made me laugh. So, since 1952. So, this is one of the – actually, I'm willing to say this is the most important, the most critical development in international politics since World War II. The notion of the Russian-Chinese alliance, ideological and everything else, it makes perfect sense. The other thing that no one's talking about is the alliance between those two and Germany. Germany is absolutely refusing to implement the sanctions on those countries. Germany is making a fortune in Russia. Their trading is incredibly wealthy, remunerative, completely in every way. The alliance, the wars in the past have been largely artificial, created by Great Britain more than anything else. My theory on World War I. The EU is falling apart. NATO is falling apart because of this. The U.S. is trying to get them to pay more for their defense, although they're not entirely sure against what. The Germans are absolutely refusing to divest from whether it be the Nord Stream pipeline or Mercedes. Again, you don't tell these oligarchs what to do and where they make their money. And they're absolutely refusing to listen to the United States. There's a huge Atlantic divide right now. But politicians don't have much power. They don't understand all this stuff. They don't understand the niceties of it. Career diplomats do, but that doesn't matter who's in office. So we worry about, the government as a whole, as an institution, as a regime, as a ruling class, more than any particular politician. So that's the most critical element in world politics right now.
We're almost seeing history repeat itself here, like with the British pulling us into this type of thing again, right? Britain and Israel.
Well, I did a broadcast, and I just published a paper on the war between Azerbaijan and Armenia. And of course, the U.S. was on the side of Turkey. Turkey financed Azerbaijan, Armenia, who was a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and close to Russia. For the first time lost because the color revolution put a Guaido or a Biden or Saakashvili type person in power in Armenia, who deliberately played down the military angle and threw the Russians out. The significance there, of course, is Israel has most of its military-industrial complex in Azerbaijan. They've actually colonized the country, the point being to begin a war with Iran from Azerbaijani bases, which they border one another.
Rothschild oil field there, Baku in Azerbaijan, isn't that a big oil field for Rothschild there?
Yeah. Part of the problem there is that Russia has stuff there too. Russia's been trying to separate Azerbaijan from Turkey for a very long time, and it's failed. Now, they've ended the war, and they have a peacekeeping force there, but Armenia was humiliated. Rothschild has huge interest there, has been since the late 19th century. You know, Baku was part of the Russian Empire, is also part of the Soviet Union. The first two states to recognize independent Azerbaijan was the U.S. and Israel in 1991. So there's good reason for this. Iran took this as a clear threat, monopolizing oil coming from the Caspian region is a huge source of energy in the future. The people who run the Biden administration want to go back and make sure that the U.S. is dependent on these sources of fuel, shutting down the pipeline. You know what he's done with not just in the XL, but everywhere else, and therefore giving the U.S. an excuse to go back over there, despite the U.S. military being in a disastrous state right now. This is what happens when you have a dying empire lashing out at very successful competition. You mentioned Israel and Turkey in this, and that's the Azerbaijani war was essential in the possible coming war with Iran. You remember Hillary Clinton during the campaign, Trump said that if she was elected, she would declare war on Iran. This is something that both parties want. They approach to the two sides of American politics with two different arguments. Everything that they do to try to get a consensus going. And they think this will distract Americans from the disastrous economy and their disastrous lives and how illegitimate the U.S. government is. But all of these color revolution governments, including the U.S.
too, if you think about it, all these things.
Hey, let's let Giuseppe jump in here with a couple of questions. Giuseppe, go ahead.
Dr. Johnson, I'd like to get your take on the current state of the relationship between the Rothschild international banking cabal and the Russian central bank.
Well, I think we may have spoken about this before. I don't know. I go on so many of these, I can never keep it straight. When the Russians and the Chinese decided to dump the dollar for most of their energy and actually most of their bilateral trade, the Russian government took over the Russian central bank. This had to be done because any private banker would have been opposed to this, that kind of de-dollarization. It was slow. I have an article where Putin appointed a few people who then cleaned house. He shut down a lot of banks dealing too heavily with dollars. There's a law against American foreign interference in Russian politics, etc. This is, I want to say, 4 years ago now. The de-dollarization procedure meant that the private bank in Russia had to go. The new prime minister there now is someone who was heavily involved in accounting and banking, which is not a coincidence. And as always, as in the end of the Tsarist era as well as now, the Rothschilds have declared war. And they declared war on this guy even beforehand, knowing full well what he was all about. There's plenty of countries out there that have state-owned central banks. I mean, Switzerland is one that people keep forgetting about. 55% of that bank is owned by the cantons, not by private investors, which is one of the reasons they can keep their secrecy. And one of the reasons, by the way, there's been a declaration of war against them, along with Vietnam, for currency manipulation, I think last November. People forget about Switzerland, Vietnam, China, Taiwan, now Russia, Belarus, Burma, a few others, most of Central Asia. And of course, this is anathema to the free marketeers and the capitalists and that Rothschild Friedman type mentality. So it's extremely hostile now. I just read where about half the Russian population, according to a Levada poll, Levada is owned by the United States, want Putin to stay no matter how long it is for the rest of his life. Doesn't matter who he has to violate, doesn't matter. Violating constitution doesn't make any difference. They want him to stay. And there are a few possibilities for successors, but this is part of the reason. Putin is aware of how this banking oligarchy operates. He knew how to very quietly and slowly dethrone them. It took a while. And the reason why he dethroned them. So I would say since over the last 3 years, it's been more hostile than ever.
Giuseppe, do you have a follow-up question? Go ahead.
My follow-up question is last, I don't know, I think it was maybe around the turn of the year, Putin announced that he was dealing with Parkinson's and was intent upon retiring soon. And do you have any updates on is he going to retire and who do you believe will replace him?
Well, he's shown no signs of Parkinson's that I've been able to see. I keep hearing about that. There's two people that come up as far as successors. I mean, he's got to go eventually. I can't imagine this is a great job. You know, despite him being one of the most popular politicians in the world, having to deal with an endlessly hostile Western NATO and all the rest, it's got to be draining. But the defense minister, Shoigu, is always touted as a possibility. Nationalists tend to favor him. But I mentioned the prime minister already, Mishustin. And, you know, he was kind of a surprise person to put in there. But he's put in there for financial reasons. He was a director of the Federal Taxation Service for 10 years, from 2010 to 2020. He's only 54. But the reason why that's significant is that this is the man that's been going after the oligarchs in this period of time. This is the guy who's been building the cases of tax evasion against these Judaic and liberal oligarchs for a very long time now. The man is a financier. He knows the banking world extremely well. It's not a coincidence that this man, who I didn't see coming at the time, it was just last year, was put as prime minister and sort of possibly an heir apparent. I'm not going to say that. Other than those two, I don't have any, no names are rushing to mind. But again, I didn't see Mishustin coming either. So I don't know, but the reason he was put in the prime minister office and has been relatively popular, though kind of faceless, doesn't have the charisma as Putin has, but his knowledge of taxation, building these cases, knowledge of oligarchy and, tax evasion, the criminal justice system is essential. And in the Navalny case as well, he's been essential there too. And so there is a financial reason for that. And I guess at the moment, I'm not predicting anything, but it's a definite possibility that he would be the next one.
Well, Dr. Johnson, what's your take on this Navalny character? First of all, you know, I don't buy this whole story that, you know, Putin and company had him poisoned with Novichok. Because it's like, you know, if they wanted to kill Navalny, they would, you know, I think they have cyanide there in Russia probably. And, you know, this Novichok thing is supposed to be like, oh, that proves that the Russians did it. You know, I don't see why they would have picked that. And it just seems to me that this Navalny character is sort of being positioned as this, you know, savior that's going to bring Russia back to the West. And it appears that he might just be sort of a front man to, you know, do sort of have a puppet president in Russia once again. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I just published a lengthy paper in Katon, which is the Russian journal, bilingual Russian journal, which I highly endorse, on the Navalny case. And I delved deep into the Russian press and going back many years with this man. This Novichok is supposed to be the most toxic substance on the planet. The tiniest speck of it is supposed to wipe out, you know, anyone within a certain radius. It doesn't seem to kill anybody. This is the second time in the Skripal case a few years ago in Britain, and now in the Navalny case, and there's one other where no one seems to die of the world's most toxic substance. Who are these guys that he's sending? And why the hell would you use a substance like that? And the Skripal case from a few years ago, he was in a Russian prison for a while. But they wanted to eliminate him. And there's never really any motive here. Because Navalny, up until the Western press began beaming this into Russia, was known maybe by 5% of the Russian population. They had no idea who this man was. He was a threat to nobody. I actually looked into the cases that he's been prosecuted under, and he has the same pattern of behavior. He's had a government post that he used to enrich himself. The guy's actually guilty. Of course, the American press has no idea what I'm talking about. They don't even look into this. I believe it was the Washington Post. Simply, he said, oh, this is a setup. Navalny says this. And that was all the evidence they needed. He says it's true, therefore it must be. That's how deep these guys go. You know, they ask him, they ask Navalny's opinion, and then I'm set up, and they say, okay, he's set up. No further than that. The European Court of Human Rights reversed a Russian court's decision. Now, I have no idea how that court has any standing whatsoever on anything, let alone on a Russian case that never even got the documents for. You know, how is he able to leave the country so easily and go to Germany? Well, it was very easy, and he went to Germany for a good reason, because the main target of the Navalny case is the Nord Stream pipeline. I mentioned before that Germany is refusing to divest. She's refusing to pull out of Russia, etc., follow any of these sanctions. The U.S. really can't do much about it. The first thing, there's no sample of the substance ever sent to Russia, which the Chemical Weapons Treaty states they have to do. No medical data sent back to Russia, which again the treaty says they have to do. Without evidence, without any argument, they blame Russia for getting another botched assassination of a nobody who was in jail in Russia. And by the way, when Navalny got convicted of this stuff, most of his sentences were suspended. He took these weird positions that he has no, he's a lawyer, and he went to the Patrice Lumumba University, which is for third world students in Moscow. I don't know how that even happened. Nothing makes sense about this man. He's never practiced law. Yet he's been the head of company after company after company with no source of income that anyone can see. But even the Russian liberals turned on him. He was, I think the case is still going on. One of the liberal parties, I don't know if it was Lobloka or what, they gave him $3 million, and he was head of an advertising company. I don't know how he has no background in advertising. And he took the check and did nothing with it. And they ended up suing him, which, of course, has not made it into the American press.
You know, his life story doesn't make sense, and he gets nothing but positive press coverage from the West. So do you think that he has some kind of deep state connection to the West and some kind of a puppet for the West? Or what's your take on that?
Well, every one of these color revolution guys, and in my paper, which is, you know, like 15 pages long, every one of these guys is educated in the West. Every one of these color revolution guys has a Western connection. When Navalny was first convicted, his very first fraud case, no one knew who this man was. He was given, for some reason, a scholarship to Yale. Now, we all know what Yale is. Now, it's an infamous institution. It's almost the other headquarters of the CIA. And every one of these men, you know, every one of these guys has a is Western educated. All the color revolution people. But Navalny has no charisma. He has no base in Russia. He polled, like all these liberals, he polled, you know, 4, 5, 6% most of the time. And this goes for all these people. I'm looking at right now the very same Levada Center. 9% of Russians look favorably on him. But, you know, you have everyone. You know, Ashraf Ghani in Afghanistan, Juan Guaido in Venezuela, Saakashvili in Georgia. On and on and on. All of these people are educated in the West. Baridi in Egypt. All these guys. Yeah, the Egyptian guy, he went to the Army War College in Carlisle.
Assisi, yeah.
So all of these guys were educated in the West. Why, after he's been convicted of fraud, among embezzlement, other things, in the Rocha case in 2008, why just after his conviction, he gets this scholarship to Yale? You know, the man was not distinguished academically. He did not function as a lawyer. It's not even in law. So clearly he was brought to the U.S.
But
of course he speaks English, and all these guys do, and he was given his marching orders from that point on.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, the Yale connection, because it's amazing. You know, he's leading a candlelight vigil. He's leading a protest. He's this horrible victim of Novichok poisoning. When obviously if they wanted to kill him, they could have just given him cyanide or something like that, and he'd be dead in 30 seconds. But you know, then they even have video of him on the airplane, you know, oh God, I'm suffering, help me, you know, and then just the press coverage he gets in the West is so suspicious. And that's very interesting.
They're sensationalizing it, Dave. They're definitely grabbing that and making it bigger. They did the same with that polonium thing with Litvinenko a while back, trying to kick off something like that with him as well. And did you see that Skripal thing that they were the scene management team there? These people weren't even wearing protective gear. So if that was as true as what they're saying it was, and not a media operation from the BBC and the Western powers, I don't know. I'm having a hard time buying it. It stakes to high heaven. Just like that Buk 3 missile that they said shot down flight MH17 and try to blame that on Russia as well. And look what that did. That took out 82 of the top 100 virologists on that thing that were going down to fight the Ebola epidemic. You know, another manufactured thing that the same people were trying to do to pretty much take resources from defenseless populations.
Well, in the Skripal case too, the bench on which they were initially found was just a couple of miles from the British P-4 military lab at Porton Down at Wiltshire, which, by the way, is one of the few labs in the world still capable of producing Novichok.
Well, it's a coincidence.
Oh, of course it is.
Quite.
Now, the doctor, Dr. Sabiev, in Siberia, where the plane first landed with Navalny, again, obviously they let him go, even though they said he shouldn't be flying anywhere. He said the man has diabetes, an internal trigger mechanism, the Russians said. They did every test possible. They found no toxic substance in his blood or his kidneys, liver, lungs. He was not poisoned. But obviously, if these are the same guys that let him leave, they can't be in on it. So, despite them saying he's too sick, but the man had severe diabetic shock, and in fact, his late onset diabetic shock, and all of his symptoms are consistent with that. Now, when he went to Germany, which again is the main country here because of the pipeline that they need Germany to pull out of, there's not a shred of evidence that they've ever given, not a document, nothing. Novichok clearly wasn't involved. Everyone on that plane would have been killed. They can't get their story straight. The first thing is that he had it in his water bottle. in which case everyone on the plane would have died. The second story was that it was in a teacup when he was at the airport terminal, in which case everyone would have died. Nothing makes sense. But we all know that Johnson's law remains unchallenged and as iron as ever.
Lay it on us, Johnson's law.
You don't know what Johnson's law is?
No, tell the audience what it is.
I am insulted and outraged. This is This is one of the greatest discoveries in social science. I don't know, since there's been social science. Johnson's law, which I discovered and named after myself when I was studying the Burmese military government many years ago with Michael Collins Piper. Johnson's law has two formulations. Formulation number one, the more obscure the country or the region, the more the American press feels free to lie about it. The second issue, the second formulation, is that the more obscure the area or the region, the country, the more they're going to make mistakes about it, just give disinformation, not even realizing. Because who's going to say otherwise? You talk about the Burmese military government. How many guys, other than me, are going to be able to say anything about it? They could say that their guns are made out of cheese. I don't know. Who's over there? I mean, North Korea is the worst. You can't even go there. How can you possibly know? Western China is another one. They could say whatever the hell they want. They could invent, and they have invented these stories. Now, if it were Kansas, it would be harder to do. But here, they could just simply concoct, and who cares? How many people could possibly say anything about these areas, about these countries, about these people, about these poisons, about these political figures? So they could say whatever the hell they want. I mean, who's going to go to Russia and get all the court documents and read them? They can say, so Johnson's law says when you have obscure areas and people and places like this, they could simply say whatever the heck they want. And the handful of people who can say anything about it are very easy to simply ignore.
Those are good laws. In fact, you could add the addendum that the Fourth Estate has now become a Baltimore crack house, and they're so lazy and unwilling to research what Novichok is, how it really works. They just like, oh, Novichok, that's a poison. I'll write that. And my first profession, well, I'm a degree journalist, have over 500 byline articles for the largest morning daily in the state of Wisconsin. Then I moved to long form specialty publishing for business journals and magazines. And I knew and was trained to, you know, write objectively. And whenever you inserted opinion back then, they were like, if you want to write an opinion, go work in the editorial department. You know, that used to be a clear differentiation. And I saw an email, you know, I follow these color revolutionary buffoons, and here's the hot young journalist emails. So I subscribed to about four or five just to see what the hell kind of toxic delusions and deceptions they're spewing. And they are so bad. And so I got the feels. That's my journalism. I'm feeling it right here, like Disney when Bambi's mother died. Oh, it's so ridiculous. It's not journalism. It's literally not journalism anymore. And yet that's the standard fare these days.
Well, I guess it all depends on how you define the term opinion. Because for these people, you know, leftist ideology is an opinion. That is a simple fact that you can report. I don't believe that these people had ever any intention or any obligation in their own minds to be objective. That's not the point. That's not why you go
point.
Into it.
Right.
That's not their job. And, you know, they're willing to lose listeners and readers in supporting the agenda. You know, you have a media company that tells the truth now, you'd have a massive market. They're not touching it. We all know that the American press has minimal legitimacy, has minimal respect, that they're, especially the print dailies, are collapsing. And that means that these foreign correspondents really don't exist anymore. They don't have the money to pay a real foreign correspondent anymore. The people who I've been saying the Western China thing or the Burma thing, the people who they're paying rarely leave the country. They're not specialists in the area. They're usually under 30. And I remember in the Xinjiang so-called concentration camps and all that nonsense in China, they simply went to the Western Chinese, the Uyghur Turkish activist group in D.C. That's where they got their information from, that and the CIA. And I have even CIA documents from WikiLeaks saying that this is a joke. These guys come to us for information. They don't go there. They don't have the money to send anybody there anymore. They used to have foreign correspondents decades ago, but they simply don't have the money anymore. These institutions. And so if you want to be a journalist working for one of these big papers, you do what you're told, because you know that there's 1,000 people willing to take your place at any given moment. So these are becoming scarcer. These jobs are scarce. But it's as you say, that the crack house thing, that's a different law. I don't think that's a corollary of Johnson's law. I'm willing to accept it as a different law, though. But the crack house law is very important. I think it's a bit understated. It's laziness. It's not understanding the difference between fact and opinion. It's very cloudy cognition. It's their hothouse environment. It's that they really are disconnected, and that they're under such pressure to conform, or else they won't be a journalist anymore. And that's just the beginning of it. And these guys are kids. You know, you have to really know what you're talking about, international politics and political science and international economics, to even begin to talk about some of these areas and why, you know, they're important. None of these people know that. They write what they're told.
Yes, sadly.
Yeah, and it is a little strange to me that you said that the many of these daily newspapers are crumbling, but none of them have gone bankrupt or out of business. They all seem to still keep going, and I just wonder where the funding is coming from, given that you can pretty much read whatever you want online for free.
Well, we know that Bezos bought the Post. The New York Times has a foundation that is extremely wealthy. I wonder how many of the bailout funds went to these major media firms. I know that both Buffett and Gates bought quite a number of news outlets, or at least invested in them. They don't really have to be money-making entities, but they're absolutely critical for the regime to function. In an age of mass censorship, they've always been. Journalism and academia have been the two really big pillars of the left. And if they're not tightly controlled, their narrative falls to pieces. So they'll go, they'll lose whatever they have to lose in order to maintain their position. It's not even advertising anymore. They're losing a fortune. Mm-hmm. What happened in the Super Bowl is proof of that. These big companies refusing to run ads. It doesn't matter. They won't change anything, because the ideology and their role in the Great Reset is far more important. I mean, they're billionaires to begin with. They have other sources of income. But their role is very clear. And God help them if they deviate even a little bit.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation. And it also explains why all these major media outlets all operate in lockstep. They all have the exact same ideology. And just a bit earlier, you brought up Michael Collins Piper. And of course, you know, the Spotlight newspaper was, they called it, it called itself America's last real newspaper. And it certainly, I think, was true. It was very influential for me when I was a young man. I started subscribing to it. And of course, Michael Collins Piper was sort of front and center for many, many years there. Maybe you could talk a little bit about Piper and your work with him and what kind of guy he was and stuff.
You know, before I got thrown off Facebook permanently, by the way, as a threat to democracy, I was in tears. I was so happy. You know, I don't really miss it. It's like when I was banned from Kosovo. You know, I want that document framed. Yeah. Anyway, I had the Friends of Michael Collins Piper Facebook group, because we were close friends for a long time. I got my PhD in May of 99, and I was working at the Barnes Review in the Spotlight. Spotlight still existed by November 1st. And I believe it was Mike that first brought my CV to Willis's attention. I was always in trouble for something years earlier. So, and we worked together, and I mentioned the on the Burma article. And the only reason that Michael had an interest in Burma is because some of his CIA research brought some of the people involved with Soros, part of the Burmese drug trade. And he had information about that just for his final judgment book on the JFK assassination and the Jewish role in that. It just so happened that we dovetailed perfectly there. And but that was the only thing we worked on. We worked on many things. I got to know him very well. And he is, and I'll say this, there was no foul play in his death. I could guarantee you that. Last time I spoke to him, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks before he died, he said his heart was maybe at 10% capacity. He didn't lead a healthy life, unfortunately. I warned him many times. No exercise, high stress, drinking, smoking. I mean, to typical old-style journalist, really, like Jim Tucker. And then I was there when at the meeting when we switched over to the American Free Press because of everything that happened with the spotlight. The Barnes Review remained untouched. I was the editor there at the time. Willis Cardo and I became close as well. And Willis and Mike split near the end. And he ended up going to Idaho. That was at the very end of his life. But we always stayed in contact. He was the most knowledgeable man when it came to Jews in American politics. There was no man more knowledgeable and no man more honest. He was willing to fight the right wing as well as the left wing and all this stuff. And he's like Michael Hoffman in that sense. He wasn't, he didn't push a line. He didn't believe, for example, that Sandy Hook was a setup. Many of the others, he thought so, but not that one. I don't remember exactly why, but he was willing to fight, you know, some of his own people. So he was very honest, and I always trusted the man. And we worked together on several projects, and we worked very well because we had two very different strengths. But he was your classic journalist. You know, again, Jim Tucker, Chris Bolin, and myself tried to infiltrate the Bilderberg meeting in Virginia in 2002, the same day my son was born, which made it very awkward. You know, so that's your hardcore, hard-bitten, real journalist. And Tucker had worked for both the Post and the Times at one time or another. Mike Piper had been working for Willis his entire career. I mean, book after book, and I'm still reading his stuff today. And he was a very pleasant man to deal with. He feared nothing. He feared nobody. He confronted people face-to-face all the time in D.C. But he was also very humble. So I was a close friend of his, and it's pretty rare that I don't. He's missed. No one's really been able to replace him quite yet.
Yeah, I totally agree. His books were excellent, and he was always such a great writer in the Spotlight newspaper. Very influential. Chris, maybe you have a final question for Dr. Johnson before we hit the top of the hour.
He may have had to step away with his baby daughter.
Well, why don't you take it then, Giuseppe?
Well, Dr. Johnson, are you looking forward to pre-purchasing your tickets for the movie release of The Black Superman?
I tell you right now, I know you've got to make fun of me for this, but I'm dying to see the new version of Coming to America. I'm sorry. It's one of my favorite movies of the 80s.
No, that was a hilarious movie.
Listen. You guys don't know this, and this is a true story. My mother used to live in Reston, Virginia. And St. Athanasius Latin Mass Catholic Church was right there. And the exile king of Rwanda, Kigeli V, would go there. He was very cool. And he spoke English with a heavy accent. He drove a beat-up Chevy Nova. He was a right winger in every. He was a monarchist. He was obviously a monarchist. He was a strict Roman Catholic. My mother had a dinner party. Maybe this is 1997, and he came over early. They forgot the time, and we sat in my mother's living room, and I made him watch "Coming to America" with me. And we only watched the first hour because my mom found me and yelled at me. And the only time he laughed was when the girl barked in the beginning, when he was getting married in Zamunda. So I can honestly say that I watched Coming to America with the Exile King of Rwanda. So this is very important to me here. He died a few years ago.
That's a great story.
Oh, I could. Well, only because my mother found it. What are you doing? She's yelling at me. You know, he should be watching this. Said, what do you mean? He's not even laughing. Well, you know, he was almost 7 foot tall. His bodyguard was there with him, who ran into the screen door, left an imprint. Because you know, it was outside. He definitely killed a few people before. I could tell this by looking at him. His name was Boniface. So I actually have seen this movie. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So I said, slightly different movie. On the other hand, I did not know there was a black Superman. I heard there was a black James Bond, but I didn't hear about the Superman.
A black female James Bond.
It was just announced yesterday, I believe.
Oh, I thought they're going to use Idris Elba for that.
Now it might be a black woman, I guess, is the latest.
Well, Queen Latifah?
She's actually in a that's sad, man, because I used to love the TV show with that British actor in the 80s or 90s, Robert McCall,
Equalizer.
The Equalizer. And now they relaunched it, and Queen Latifah is the Equalizer. I don't know.
I think that's what I was thinking about. Yeah, I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there she is. Look at that pretty little baby.
Well, Dr. Johnson, we're pretty much at the top of the hour. Do you have a website you want to plug, or what's your latest book you're working on, or anything like that?
You know, if you didn't remind me, I probably wouldn't say anything. I have no concept of my self-interest. My website is rusjournal.org, rusjournal.org. This is a full-time job for me, so I depend on support financially and every other way. I'm on Radio Albion every Wednesday and Thursday. I have the hour Orthodox Nationalist thing on Wednesday, and then the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks on Thursday, usually in international politics. I have Patreon. I'm putting together my Telegram channel. I'm finally, you know, getting a hang of some of the other social media outlets ever since they threw me off Facebook as, again, a threat to democracy officially. And I'm, again, very proud of that. I bring a tear to my eyes just thinking about it. But I really need financial help, and I really would appreciate it from all our listeners.
Interview a threat to democracy. Thank you for your time. Hope to have you on soon. Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. Last hour, we were talking with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, a man who was deemed a threat to democracy by Facebook. That's a badge of honor if there ever was one. And now we're going to talk to another man who is quite possibly a threat to democracy as well as other things, Gertjan from Canada. Gertjan, how are you, sir?
I am fantastic, Scorpio. Thanks for having me back. Hi, yeah, Giuseppe. Absolutely.
Hey, Gertjan. Glad you're back.
Thank you, man.
So you were starting to talk a little bit about Islamic versus Christian influence. Do you want to finish up your thoughts there before we go on to anything else, or?
Well, it would be kind of confusing for your listeners if we just pick that up sort of mid-sentence. So maybe what I could do is quickly encapsulate what I was saying.
Okay, sounds good.
Basically, what I was expressing was how the Muslim religion, which I know something about, having read the Quran several times in a penguin edition. For if you are not familiar with the Quran, you could either do a search, Google search, or whatever you use to search the internet, and you can find actually a PDF copy of my book, 157-page book, which is my take on the Quran. And it is a kind of like a Reader's Digest version of the Quran. So I've done, you know, the hard work for you. And,
what's the name of your book?
It's called The Horror, An In-Depth Look into the Quran. Okay. If you take a look in Jeff Renz's website, actually you'll see it in the book scroll, but when you click on the cover design there, where all the book titles are scrolling, you click on it and nothing comes up. So you have to actually punch in that title, The Horror, An In-Depth Look into the Quran. You can actually also find it in connection with my name. If you were to just Google my name, there's lots of references to me in Google, and that book is in there. But what I learned from reading the Quran is that almost every page of the Quran admonishes the Muslim to torture unbelievers to death. And one of the favorite ways they do it is, quote, a pavilion of flames. So if you don't buy into the belief that Allah is this being who is not even physically or personally present in the paradise that is presented to the Muslim, the paradise in which there are no adult women, only the houris, who are these virgins, young virgins, whose skin color is that of coral and rubies. Now, of course, you realize that, you know, white girls, their skin tends to be pink like that of corals, and they turn red like rubies if you bake them naked in the sun in some Arabic slave market, which is where a lot of white women ended up at some point. Indeed, there is a town in Ireland on the southwest shore that was raided by Arabic Muslim corsairs who came up regularly up the coasts of Europe. And in one case, they totally took out 5,000 people. They liquidated an entire town, these Arabic Muslim corsairs, who have this bizarre belief system which teaches that Allah has no sons. So let that sink in for a minute. Allah, there has no sons. So there is no personal connection with you and the so-called creator, who is this Allah being who is not present in paradise, where there are only young white girl virgins and these Muslim men that end up somehow there. But it's not an easy task to get in there. I mean, it is pretty well vetted, whereas the opposite teachings appear in Christianity. Now, albeit there is that aspect of the Christian development in Western Europe that led towards the sheepification of the people and generally the emasculation of men over time. You know, the image of sheep and Jesus of Nazareth being some kind of a shepherd, you know, that whole idea of a shepherd. You know, people don't realize a shepherd is somebody who is able to fight off wolves with his shepherd's crook. You know, this is somebody who is not some wimpy leader of a bunch of dumb sheep. And indeed, actually, the idea of dumb sheep, sheep actually can be pretty clever as animals go, but they still are sheep and they obey and they follow in flocks. And that's essentially what has happened is that, you know, the Jew even uses the word goyim, like animals, plural, in human skin. You know, we are, yeah, but it's not the Jews. That's right. It's the globalists. It's the... you know, it's George Soros only, and it's, it's not the Jews.
Gertchen.
For any, yes?
A quick question. Are you familiar with the origins of Muhammad and how he sought to become an elite rabbi in the Hebrew religion? But they were like, get out of here, kid. You bother me. They didn't like his brashness and all that. And so they pretty much told him to go take a hike. And then he married an older Hebrew woman who saw that he had potential to start his own cult. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes, I am familiar with that story. And the Jewish hand in the development of Islam is, I was going to get to that, It's my contention that both Islam and Christianity are the inventions of Jewish minds. But of course, back in those days, they were not called Jews. But the entity which seems to have infected these humanoids that identify themselves as Jews, 99% of which have an ancestry in Khazaria, hence they are mostly white-skinned, but within the ranks of the creatures that look human, that call themselves Jews, there are a variety of genetic expressions that, on the one hand, you see people like Benjamin Netanyahu, Netanyahu, in Dutch that means he is just like a Yahoo. And if you're familiar with the stories of Swift, Jonathan Swift, you know, the horse people, they were called the Yahoos. And so Netanyahu in Dutch sounds like he is just like a Yahoo, which, of course, most of us who are somewhat aware do recognize that he definitely is much like a Yahoo. He's nuttier than a fruitcake and dangerous.
True that.
But yeah, true that. Well, so,
and another aspect of what Giuseppe was just talking about is I always found it very odd that when Muhammad got his ass kicked out of Mecca, for stirring up trouble and causing problems, he was given they were going to kill him, but he managed to escape to Medina, and it was the Jews who gave him refuge there in Medina. At the time, Medina had a very large Jewish population, so I always found that to be a little strange.
Well, this isn't strange at all. You know, if we can use that word, the Jew, that entity is an alien presence. It's hive-minded. It is like a chameleon. And as I was saying, the modern-day Jew expresses in various genetic manifestations. Either they're more Mongolian, and those are the Jewish Mongol types that invaded Germany and mass raped and murdered and did their horrible thing, you know, crucified women, spiked them to barn doors, raped, you know, 9-year-old girls as they broke their backs over a table, you know, that sort of thing. That's the Mongol side. But overall, the Jew is a hybrid made up of Mongol, Hun, Tartar, Turk, and draconian DNA. And some of these Jews are heavy draconians, and they are now, because of what's happening to the planet, it's slowing down its rotation, so the vibration has changed. Their ability to stay in phase has completely been altered now, and so lots of them are phasing in and out. And I just learned from a documentary, I suspected this, but David Icke actually is a shape-shifting reptilian. And now I have seen accurate film footage of him actually going through phase shifts. I always wondered, how is it that David had so much insight into the reptilian story when he wrote and published his book, The Biggest Secret, which came out in the early 1990s. I read it in 1992, I believe, sometime. No, wait a minute.
I think The Biggest Secret came out in 1999.
Oh, 99. Sure. Okay, well, yeah. I read it in around 2001, 2002. And so, you know, that information. And then I started looking for it. And then after I had read that book, and I'd never mentioned it to the mother of my son, and both Karen and Michael were standing on the stairs one day. I came over and they said, guess what? We just saw on TV. We saw this man. Oh, dad, you won't believe it. This man's eyes. This was during one of George Bush's presidential, whatever it was. I don't know the details, but it was on TV. His eyes, they look just like reptiles' eyes.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen that as well. I just want to interrupt you briefly. Giuseppe, are you hearing any feedback from
I think Gershon? That's amazing. And so, you know, I'd
No, I'm not.
Okay, because they're saying in the chat room, they're hearing a little bit of feedback in the chat room from him.
Yeah, it's not for me. There's nothing
Which
back
chat
behind
room
me.
Are we talking about? The Revolution Radio chat room?
Yeah, because I'm hearing feedback.
Gertchen, so what do you make of the latest antics with the Jew puppet Biden bombing Syria in the last day or two?
Well, that's got nothing to do with Biden. He wasn't even aware of it, neither Kamala Harris. And she was complaining, how come nobody kept her in the loop?
Neither one knew? I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we were saying
in the loop about what? I'm sorry, I missed that. What was it?
Well, the bombing of Syria now.
Either
again,
Biden
by the criminals.
Or Kamala the Beast knew, Gertchen's saying. That's stunning to me that neither one of them knew that. Wow.
I just what I do pretty much all day, a lot of the time, is I watch a lot of documentaries. I watch a lot of travels. So I'm filling my, and that came across today in a documentary I was watching. And they're also claiming in this documentary that some of these people now are actually clones of the original and not even real true human beings any longer. And now look at.
That came up yesterday in Giuseppe's show. Some people in the chat room were saying that they thought Joe Biden was a clone because there's pictures of him with his eyes completely black, and then there's pictures of him where his eyes are blue. So I don't know if I buy into that, but it's an interesting theory. Gertchen, could you possibly – I'm still hearing the feedback. Could you possibly drop off and then come right back on so we can try to get rid of this?
Yeah.
Giuseppe, so do you think Joe Biden is a clone or a cyborg of some kind or not?
Well, it's interesting. I'm looking at Twitter right now. Somebody's doing a side-by-side 10 years ago video and Biden now, and it just doesn't look like the same guy. I mean, he's got – the new Biden has this really much larger cranium and just total black squinty eyes, and the 10 years ago Biden, I don't know, it could be the same guy, or it's more, I mean, but his, I don't know, how can I show this to you? I know how I can do it. I can put it, I'll put this in the various chats, because it, I mean, it looks different. It looks the same, but the way his skull has shifted so dramatically, it just doesn't seem like that's how somebody ages. So here we go. I'll put it right here. And then if you want to click on it, and I'll put it in each of the chats as well. It just doesn't look – I mean, you look at their similarities in the facial structure and the skull, and the ears look similar, but it doesn't – how did – in 10 years, how did his skull blow up literally? I mean, take a look at that side by side if you can see it. Here's
Gertchen in the green room.
There he is. There he is.
There he is. The man of the hour.
Try Gertchen. It again, Gertchen.
Yeah. I can still hear whatever it is. That's.
Yeah. I'm hearing the echo too.
Oh, we had that echo? Technical problem before.
And you, not do you. Have, you do have headphones on, so that's good.
Yeah, and I'm talking through my my microphone, which is
right. It's a good looking.
Fine.
You have a big microphone, so
it's
that's what all the girls say.
Yeah,
exactly. You got my joke. You got my joke. There you go. Hold on, let's see.
Oh my gosh, this was this girl when I bought some years ago. I was in a Mac store buying a one of these large cinema screens and a new G4 at the time. And as I was unpacking that flat screen, this girl, she goes, "Whoa, it's so big. It's so big." Because those are the first big flat screens at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm still hearing it, but we'll see what we can do about it. Well, Gertchen, I'm sure you're familiar with the Kalergi plan for Europe, right?
Yes.
Well, how do you see I think it's safe to say that the oligarchs and the power centers of Europe seem to be Jewish controlled to some degree, at least, to say the very least. Why do you think they're using you know, this influx of Islamic immigrants into Europe. Supposedly the two groups are enemies. What do you think the politics and the behind-the-scenes controls are of that?
Well, the master plan is to get rid of as many white people as possible. So a great way to do that is into a white Western European Christian culture. They bring in these Muslims, and the particularly dangerous Muslims are the Negro Muslims coming up from Africa, because the average IQ of a Negro is around 73.3. And so they are really dense. They are completely filled with Islamic indoctrination, which is a real twist to the mind. Because as I said, there is no relationship between the believer and his God. And like in the Christian religion, we believe in Father, Son, and Spirit. So, you know, there is a direct relationship that we have with our Creator. It's personal, and that's very different. And we are not admonished by to some degree, of course, it depends on which take you have regarding the Christian God. You know, if you go to the Yahweh Jewish concept and portrayal of the Creator, then of course you have that bloodthirsty, you know, being that wants sacrifices and so forth. And, you know, and that is a very powerful fear entity. You know, that's a fear-mongering doctrine that certainly is very helpful in subjecting people and making them obey. But, you know, when you really look into the true teachings of the one who initially brought the idea, well, he's not original with that idea, the idea of God as a father being, that is not original with Jesus of Nazareth. You know, the one God concept was initially brought by Melchizedek, and then we saw that promulgated with Amenhotep, who proclaimed a one God you know, sort of a fatherhood type of a depiction of the Creator. But if you look into the teachings of Jesus that have come through in the Christian Bible, in the New Testament, particularly Matthew 23, which I find to be one of the most important books actually in the New Testament, Jesus says in there, call no man master, not even the Messiah. So in other words, there is no human being over you. You have only one who is over you, and that is your Father in heaven, with whom you can have a personal relationship. So go sit under your own fruit tree and contemplate God in your own manner. It's a private conversation. It's not something that you can write down in a book and say, this is exactly how you all should think about God. It's nonsense. God is so immense, is so all-encompassing, to suggest that any one of us can have a complete knowledge and understanding of the mind of God, I mean, that is the height of hubris. So we all have different conceptions of our Father in heaven, but realize that you can have a direct connection with the creative power, the source of the heavens and the earth, who is personal, because he is the first source and center of everything. So personality is a reality. All three of us are unique, different persons, and we all have unique and different relationships with our human fathers to the relationship that our siblings have with our human fathers. Well, the relationship we have with God, with the universal Father, is every bit as personal and unique. So that's why Jesus was admonishing, and it's much more clearly spelled out in the Urantia book. I've mentioned that before, is in the Urantia book, he says, go contemplate God under, you know, in your own manner, under your own fig tree. So, you know, don't be forming these, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with social groups, and there's nothing wrong with philosophizing, you know, about God and theology and so forth.
Good points. Very good points. Giuseppe, why don't you take the baton and take a run?
Gertchen, what do you think of the Zionist Joe Biden? And here, let me play this real quick.
Yeah, it's interesting.
If I were a Jew, I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
And I don't know if you've seen how he stacked his cabinet. I think I might even have this graphic. Stacked his administration. Look at this. That's instead of Joe Biden, it should be Jew Biden.
Doesn't look much different from what Donald Trump had.
Very true.
Donald Trump was completely surrounded by all these Lubavitchers. In fact, Jared Kushner is a Lubavitcher. And for the Jew to say that it's that we're a race is nonsense. Because if it was a race, then how could Ivanka, you know, convert to Judaism? How is it that you have people in the Sudan who are blacker than coal and they're Jews? You know, so the thing is, though, that the majority of them, as we're saying, are descendants of the Khazars, and they manifest as white people like us. When you look at the former professor who blew up with some sort of an intestinal problem. He actually blew up in his own feces, this disgusting Noel Ignatieff, who was a Harvard professor with dubious degrees, advocating openly the extermination, the genocide of white people. But yet he looks just like us. So that's why people have such a difficulty differentiating. And that's why the Negro, generally not very bright, you know, is so easily manipulated and persuaded into thinking that it is us, our people, who are responsible for the plight of the Negro. But when you take a look at the Negro in North America, for example, the Negro never had it so good in his entire history. But he has no history. So this whole idea of Black History Month is absolute nonsense because they never invented writing. So how can you have a history if you don't write it down? Human memory is what it is. And if your IQ is only 73, well, then, you know, I really doubt that your memory hole is very deep, quite frankly. And
Well, Gertchen, yeah. Aren't you referring to a certain segment of the Negro population? I mean, there's many, many intelligent blacks, highly intelligent these days.
Oh, I'm not disputing that at all. The very bright blacks are the lucky ones whose ancestors were miscegenated with Irish people or even with Jews, because you do realize that the ships that transported the Negroes, first of all, the Negroes were sold by fellow Negroes of other tribes or by Muslims, and they were bought by Jews and transported on Jew-owned ships, which were mostly manned by Jews. And the Jews had their way with some of the more comely Negresses, for sure, and impregnated them with their spawn. And so what we have in North America is most definitely there are incredibly smart Negroes. There's no question of that. In fact, there's Negroes that are way smarter than some white people. In fact, our race has been dumbed down deliberately over the last 100 years. And so the average white person is not anywhere half as clever as, say, the average white person was in Europe in the 17th or 18th century, for example. I mean, we've been dumbed down. Our native intelligence has been severely compromised with Jewish chemicals such as fluoride in our drinking water, for example, the primary cause of premature death and the destruction of the brain. Our pineal gland, which is the master antenna that connects us into the cosmic mind and is really very important and necessary for clear communications further on towards the center of all reality. Our pineal glands are compromised because of the fluoride, which is so insidious. It's in almost everything and very difficult to take away. And so the whole planet pretty much has been already been poisoned with that. And then the chemtrails and all the poisons in our food, you know, we're heavily compromised and subsequently are only able to function at but a tiny percentage of the potential that we are actually capable of when we were born tabula rasa before they started injecting us with their toxic poisons, i.e. The vaccines, the immunizations. And when you take a look at, you know, a young baby, its immune system is just starting, and then the Jew sticks a needle in there and pumps the child so full of toxins that it never gets off the ground properly, is already compromised, like right away at birth.
Yeah,
some of us.
Yeah, that's a. You're right. That's a very good point, Gretchen. And you know, this the whole subject of genetics is an interesting subject to me. You know, one of my kind of hobbies is lifting weights, and you know, it's spoken about very openly in you know. Let's say the weightlifting community, that, you know, genetics play a tremendous role in how muscular you're capable of being. Obviously, there's the, you know, the champions, they all use steroids. That's an open secret. But even if I was like to take steroids, I would never become the kind of bodybuilder that, say, Arnold Schwarzenegger was. There's a genetic limit or a genetic preset as to how you will look, no matter how hard you work out, no matter how good your diet is, or how many steroids you take. And so I just find this concept of genetics interesting, because human beings are told, well, you know, there's no difference in the races. There's no genetics. It doesn't matter. Yet we have the concept of, you know, race, you know, champion race horses that cost millions of dollars versus just an average racehorse, or certain breeds of dogs are made for certain things and others are made for entirely different things. Yet we're supposed to believe that human beings are just all sort of the same and genetics don't matter. And but in the weightlifting world, it's very openly talked about that your genetics will determine how muscular you're able to become.
Well, that's a huge, just like the seventh month, a huge July that all humans are equal. I mean, there are so many differences in the various countries and the various tribes, and it's ridiculous to ignore that. 100 years ago, there was some excellent science, and now because of these Jew mind rapists, it's all, that's racist. You can't point out the differences when all there are differences.
It's so obvious. You only have to open your eyes. But the problem is that because people go through the public fool system in the Western world, it's a total it was invented essentially by a Jewish mind. The model for North American schooling was based on the teachings of John Dewey, who was an avowed Satanist, a disgusting creature. And he created a school system that literally dumbs people down. I mean, I witnessed it firsthand 20 years as a high school fine arts teacher. I noticed over time, you know, the gradual diminishing of the mean intelligence of my classes. Kids now are about as dumb as a sack of nails. They haven't got a clue. So they spent 12 years in the public fool system for what? They don't know how to skin a deer. They don't know how to hunt. They don't know how to grow vegetables. They don't know how to look after themselves if they were, you know, lost in the woods. They wouldn't know how to build a lean-to or, you know, even how to start a fire. They haven't got a clue. They don't know how to invest money. You know, I wasn't taught that. You know, and I resent that. All this knowledge and information that really a child in grade 3 or 4 can learn how to manipulate investments and watch graphs and all that sort of stuff. Some children at an early age would have a great interest in that. They'd be millionaires by the time they were 14. I mean, that's really what should be taught in the schools, but isn't. But it is to the Jewish children, because they go to Talmud Torah schools and they have a completely different curriculum. And that's why they come off seeming like they're so much smarter and everything. It's just they're better educated and they're better organized. We are not organized as a people, and that's our downfall. And another big problem we have collectively, we are way too nice. And that's what happened with the Christian teachings, is that they created us to be way too nice, to turn the other cheek, you know, to think that, yeah, Jesus was, as I going back to what we were saying earlier, you know, this wimpy shepherd kind of a depiction, you know, and you see that, you know, that image painted a lot in medieval and, well, more Renaissance paintings, you know, Jesus, the shepherd with his little sheep on his lap. And it's also, you know, but no, that's not the essence of what Jesus stood for, but that is what Christianity is. And Christianity is the teachings of Saul of Tarsus, a Jew, fell off his horse and saw the light. Oy vey, I saw the light. You guys, I saw the light. And everybody believed him because, you know, they are masters of the lie, and he was preaching to people who were not highly educated. The early Christian development was not amongst the intelligentsia initially. It was amongst the downtrodden poor. Just like communism appeals to that level, the downtrodden poor, they find that highly appealing, that we're all equal and that we're all, you know, the same. Those are the three horsemen of the apocalypse that came out of the French Revolution. It's liberty, equality, fraternity. It's absolute nonsense. And that is total Masonic, Illuminati bull, you know what it is. And we need to realize that it is that, because we are not all equal. Genetics plays an incredibly powerful role in intelligence, in how your body turns out. To suggest otherwise, you got to be really stupid to think otherwise. It's so evident. And as you mentioned, race horses, I mean, look at how we take care to breed wheat and barley and horses and whatever.
Everything.
But when
except for human being.
Exactly. Because the word eugenics, which is that, where, you know, I looked at myself when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I thought, well, you know, my body is like this and whatever, and, you know, I don't really, and the world is turning the way it is. I don't want to make a ton of children because they are going to end up in a situation that really, you know, they may feel not so great about, albeit I am happy that I do have, in fact, have children. But that kind of thinking doesn't occur to a Negro, doesn't occur to the Muslim. They don't think in terms of their future generations and how what we do here affects the future. They don't think in terms of that. So how are they any different than animals? Because the animal doesn't have a conception of tomorrow either. They live on a day-by-day basis.
You know? Well, and it's an interplay between, you know, genetics and then the spirit that inhabits that body that's genetically encoded a certain way. It's very complex, but I find it a fascinating topic, and it's somewhat forbidden, of course. Giuseppe, Steve from the UK wanted to call in, and he had a question for Gertchen. So could you possibly bring him on?
You're damn right I can bring on. Does he want to come on?
He could come on StreamYard.
Yeah, let me send him the invite.
Oh, okay. And Gertchen, you know, going back to the Bible, while we get Steve up, you know, if you read the creation story in Genesis and about Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, there's quite a bit of evidence that suggests that Cain was not from the same genetics that Abel was, and that Cain was actually the result of a union between Eve and this creature that is described as a reptilian being, a Satan, whatever you want to call it. But it's interesting that this creature was not cursed to slither around on the ground until after the seduction of Eve. It happened afterwards, which implies that this creature was a bipedal being of some kind. And it makes a lot more sense that possibly Eve had a union, a sexual union with this creature It explains a lot more of why they would have been kicked out of the garden other than just eating a piece of fruit. And then you're left with this idea that you have a serpent seed line, a group of people that are just from a very different genetic background.
Well, how about supposedly Adam's third son, Jovan? I mean, he was that's a pretty dark bloodline there with his followers and all that.
Go into that. I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, go ahead, Gertchen.
Yeah, go ahead, Gertchen. Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know about the story of the third son, but I will tell you that Adam and Eve are not the first human beings on planet Earth.
Says that. It actually says that in the Bible. There's no question. And, you know, when Cain was kicked out of the garden, he goes to this place called the Land of Nod, and then he marries a woman from there. And the Bible actually tells of two creation stories, a pre-Adamic man and then an Adamic man. If you read it very carefully, that's what it says. I think we're in a situation where a lot of the Bible has been deliberately misinterpreted to take people off into this direction of turn the other cheek and just be a good sheep and all that.
Well, that's the more in the New Testament stuff. The Old Testament is a lot of fear-mongering. But do recall that it talks about the sons, plural, sons of the gods, plural, came yes. amongst the daughters of men and begat offspring. Well, we did talk in our last radio show together about giants and all of that, and the Bible mentions giants. Well, just like presently, you know, we have various heights of human beings. You know, you have some human beings who are stretched out Negro basketball players that are like almost 7 feet tall. And then you have my little friend Jody, who is like barely 5 feet, you know, weighs about 85 pounds when she's wet, you know, like mm-hmm. You know, so, and that's where we manifest in so many different sizes. Well, at one time, you know, there were beings that were human looking beings. The latest height skeleton that has been revealed is 36 feet tall mm-hmm. I believe in Caracas or somewhere in South America. It's on display, this 36 foot tall human skeleton. Well, it's yeah. my contention that there were, you know, human like beings much larger than that even, and that indeed some of these beings are likely the ones that are sitting inside the moon, keeping an eye on us, having life.
I agree, Gertchen, there's a lot of historical records from the Romans where they talk about encountering skeletons of enormously large beings when they're excavating sites to build buildings and stuff. Did we have Steve on?
Steve was there for a moment and then he dropped off, so hopefully he'll be back soon. But are both of you aware of the idea that the actual man named Smithsonian scoured the world for those skeletons where the skull itself was larger than a 6 foot man, and they carefully excavated it and then brought it to his Smithsonian Museum? He was an actual crypto investigator, and once he died, the deep state inverted his intention of the Smithsonian mission, and they started to suppress all that and hide all that. So,
yeah, the Smithson family. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of suppression of information, which is really sad. Had we not been so compromised with these calcified pineal glands and compromised genetic codes, you know, we only have two strands of DNA. I feel highly compromised and quite angry over that, when really we could have, I think one researcher identified upwards of 64 strands of DNA. And of course you realize that your DNA is like a computer code. And, you know, we have only two strands. We are recognizing in some of these crystal children and the indigo children that they have indeed more strands of DNA. But if we were fully functioning the way we were meant to be functioning,
you know, we would have the insight into all this information because we have a direct link into the cosmic mind, where the entire story of human mind is on record. Human beings have been here for over a million years. There's a lot of, you know, developments that have come and gone. Entire civilizations turned to dust. Could be some of the dust that you, you know, take off your books on your bookcase. It could be dust from civilizations that existed here 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 years ago, even. Yeah.
That's a fascinating thought, Gertchen. Very, very good. And Giuseppe, you brought up a great rabbit hole, essentially, about the Smithsonian Institute and how it's essentially operated as a vacuum cleaner, sucking up all kinds of archaeological evidence that doesn't jive with the official story of human existence.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many instances. I mean, one of the best fellows who's found so much indisputable evidence is Dr. Michael Cremo. And it's funny how much society has changed and how much censorship is a boot on our throat. Back in the 90s, like 94, 95, he actually had specials, documentary specials on NBC during prime time talking about all his findings. And like you'd ever see that today, just 30 years later.
Yeah. It's actually interesting, this whole Smithsonian story, how Steven Spielberg showed us in that Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, that idea of that massive warehouse full of crates of artifacts. I mean, that is really something that really should be addressed once we take back control, is to open up those vaults. Not just the vaults of the Smithsonian, but the archives of the Vatican. That needs to be completely opened up and given back to the planet. There are probably books that go back to the Library of Alexandria. There are some researchers suggesting that not everything in that library was burned, that all the important documents were already removed before the library was burned. So
I think that's very, very possible. Absolutely. Yeah.
It would make sense. It would make sense because just if you recall that film when Sean Connery played the monk in The Name of the Rose, remember the scene where the library goes up in flames?
Yeah, it was a good movie.
He's desperately trying to save the most important books. Well, that certainly happened back then, too. People were just as much book lovers in ancient times as some of us are today, you know. And for those of you thinking that, oh, well, you know, it's all going to go electronic, don't make that mistake. Don't give up your hard covers. Don't give up your hard copy books, because they're going to become a rare commodity at some point. And the entity is hard at rewriting history, which they always have done. And they rewrite history in such a way to make it look like their prophecies come true. And that's really the story of all the prophecies in the Old Testament. That's all rewritten material after the fact. And of course, most people that, you know, really with all due respect, but not every human being is a scholar. You know, not everybody is interested in looking into these things in any great depth, which is fine. We're all different. But for those of us who do have some insight into what is what, are highly indignant over the suppression of all of this incredible information that would be so wonderful to have, because again, it would open up so many more doors and windows to our, you know, ourselves, our being. What are we? Who are we? You know, what are we capable of? A lot of human beings don't even come close to touching their potential. And that's all because by design, human beings are suppressed right from birth. You know, fortunately, I escaped all of that. I mean, I do have a polio mark on my shoulder, which is different from the polio marks of Canadians, which might be different from the polio marks. We were all marked in the 50s with a polio scar that in my case looks like a letter E. Others have like a circle.
But yeah,
those are marks.
Yeah,
well, those are deliberately marks put there so that when you die, you know, you that's connected with a certain poison that you were injected with. And, oh, it's okay. This is what happened. Oh, yeah, they track everything over long periods. And that's, again, something that most human beings are incapable of. They're barely able to think for tomorrow or the next week, let alone years and years in advance. We generally don't plan that far ahead, but they do, because they work as a hive-minded entity, which I call the international parasites. And all these creatures that you see walking about, you know, the Weinsteins and the Epsteins and the Steens and the Bergs and the so-ons, they're like the fruiting bodies, like mushrooms on the surface. The rhizome is underground. The rhizome is something that is, you know, maybe, I don't know, perhaps James Cameron has a vision of what that could be. He showed us something in his film, The Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, there is definitely some alien presence here that is not human.
Especially the later follow-up, Prometheus, that really showed a lot with the large white human-like advanced alien. But hold on for a second. I think we have to give credit where credit is due. In the chat room, XRCS points out Blacks invented getting high off fermented feces.
Oh, I saw that actually in a video.
Not an accomplishment.
In somewhere in Negro land. It's a young chap. He was about 10, maybe 12. And he'd stick his face in the anus of a cow and breathe the fumes. Then the cow was pooping, so he just pulled back for a moment, kind of briskly brushed off the anus with the cow's tail, and then continued to stick his face up the anus of the cow.
Brings a whole new meaning to that's good shit.
We're going to have to end things here on that high note. Giuseppe, why don't you give us a final thought before we hit the music?
Well, there's Steve. Crap. Steve, quick question. Well, my final thought is – oh, he dropped again. My final thought is thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Next week, we'll Scorpio, you'll have a borgishmorg of Lark and Brian and Jenna and I think someone else. I'm not sure. Isn't that right?
Lark, Texas.
Yes, Lark, Texas. I think Breiser's going to come on, too, if we can set it all up.
Oh, Breiser, that'd be awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Gertchen, this hour has just flown by with you. We're going to have you come back on soon. Steve wasn't able to get on. We're going to have to – we need to bring Steve on for another hour soon, too, and talk about his work on this new sort of way to get things on the internet that's – unbannable.
IPFS, Interplanetary File System. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. All that kind of stuff goes over my head, but I want to learn more about it. And Gertchen, thanks again for coming on. You are always a fascinating man to talk to.
The opinions expressed on this radio station. It's-